Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Dakota Lone Star, and tonight I wanted to take a moment to express my thoughts and opinions on a topic that is sensitive to some, but shouldn't be, especially if you were born and raised here, regardless of your persuasion or skin tone, your ethnicity, your social status, your independent wealth or otherwise. I wanted to talk about American exceptionalism tonight because some people don't believe that it actually exists. It still does. It's taken a rather large hit. There's a war on American exceptionalism right now as we speak. If you're a Latino listener and you work very hard, you are bootstrapping, which is a term that I will, or phrase, a term rather, that we can get into later, but we can talk about that in a little while. There's a war on American exceptionalism. It was launched almost 8 years ago now, when change came to America in the form of a half-white rock star. Now, I don't want to get into, and I want to preface that. I would like to throw my car in reverse and preface that for a moment. I never voted for Barack Obama, not once. Having said that, during his first inaugural address early in 2009, I was seated on a sofa, and I remember watching that inaugural address, and I remember a couple of tears actually rolling down my cheek, and because at that point, although I hadn't voted for the man, he essentially, and for all practical purposes, was the leader of the became the leader of the free world, quote unquote. Little did I know that he was going to disappoint at every turn. Primarily, now the one thing I do like, let me just go ahead and share a positive that this president, about this president, and there aren't many. He actually, rather than putting boots on the ground, and there are times, there is a time for war, and it's not very often, and I'm a strict conservative. Now, all of this BS that comes up every 2 to 4 years since Bush's last, George W. Bush's last tenure, if you will, or portion of his tenure as president or his second term, it seems to come up every 2 to 4 years that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Now, Snopes and other people, they're going to probably agree with that automatically yesterday. Having said that, I know I ended up befriending a man from Turkey, and thankfully he got to know me and I got to know him fairly well over a short period of time. And there are graves, mass graves, that are the result of Saddam Hussein's use of biological weapons on Turkish residents. They have, I believe, even proven that by having exhumed a grave or two or disturbed a grave or two. But if you and Michael Moore want to just grab your shovels, go ahead and head over there to the Kurdish Iraqi border, and exhume some bodies, bring them back, do some tests, and you will find that Saddam Hussein was not a good man. As a matter of fact, he threatened the life of George Bush's father. Now, I don't know anyone. I've met a lot of people around America from affluent villages, quote-unquote, to urban Americans that are just stuck in this horrible cycle. And that cycle that they're stuck in is often of their own doing, just as, you know, our sin will always find us out, in my opinion. Whatever a man sows, he'll reap. If you do A, it'll go well for you. If you choose B, and you're free to choose B, as an example, it won't go as well for you. And that's just kind of how things work out. And but I believe in giving people a hand up. I believe in eternal forgiveness in Christ Jesus, the Lord. God forbid I say that. But I want to talk about American exceptionalism tonight, because we are the last step in terms of freedom. Ronald Reagan had that right, that we are the last step in terms of actual freedom. So tonight I wanted to give out our call in number. It's 929-477-4090, and I'll try to get to your calls here in a little bit. But today, over the course of the last couple of days, I was thinking about a working definition for American exceptionalism, which exists, but it has taken body blow after body blow after head blow after body blow. You get the idea. And American exceptionalism is on the ropes, which is really, really sad. It's even tragic. It's tragic. The tragedy, real tragedy, and actually what I want to say about Barack Obama is his use of drones in the Middle East for pinpoint strikes or whatever. I think that's a good thing. I think the guy that fled the United States in an effort to befriend terrorists that was became a target of one of those drone strikes, I think that's a good thing. I don't think that we have to haul him back here just because he's quote-unquote American, where he has to face trial. If I had left tomorrow for the Middle East and joined a group of marauding Sharia shanks, I would hope at that point that would be enough for the United States government to consider me an enemy of the state. And but here's my, so kudos to, you know, look, obviously Obama's foreign policy has been a disaster, collectively speaking. They had over 100 Al-Qaeda leaders, actionable intel, in terms of where those leaders were meeting to pronounce a new leader after al-Baghdadi or Daddy or whatever took on a mortal flesh wound, so to speak. Okay, so if you have 200 men meeting to vote on or determine who their next leader is going to be in one building, and you don't take advantage of that, you're not. That's really, really, really horrifying if you're not willing to take out that one building. And if there, you know, here's the sad thing, but let me go ahead and move on to American exceptionalism. So my primary definition or first definition out of the gate, if you will, for American exceptionalism is the ability to refrain oneself from violence in light of a lifetime of diametrically opposing views, having to deal with diametrically opposing views, religious or otherwise. So it's an ability, in my opinion, to refrain oneself from violence, regardless of another individual's stance or worldview, barring Sharia law, that they're incompatible. Our Constitution and Sharia law are as incompatible as day and night. Bottom line. Send us your Sikhs. Send us your Hindus and Buddhists. Send us your Latinos. You know, that are willing to come over here and be a part of something greater than themselves. And what I wanted to do tonight is, so I'm looking, that was the first portion of my definition. I'm looking for your additional thoughts this evening on American exceptionalism. First, we need to determine, has American exceptionalism ever existed, and if so, when, and whether or not it still exists, and how American exceptionalism might look in the future. So those are three things that I think are of grave importance and can be fun to talk about, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that tonight. So we're looking at 929-477-4090. But then I went on to say, in order to effectuate change, however, it must be more than that. It must become more than what one wouldn't think of doing to another human being, peaceful human being. I understand that all quote-unquote men, I understand that some quote-unquote men only understand a perfectly placed A-10 strafing run, you know, a collective warthog move, if you will. And that is tragic. You know, when John Jaweed was traveling from village to village in Darfur before they displaced over 500,000 Africans that were actually citizens of a couple of different nations, African nations, and John Jaweed would ride to the next village and lop off arms and legs and rape women and burn things down and burn people at the stake. And it's interesting because there's a life cycle for every movement. Rome had a life cycle. The United States, too, shall have a life cycle. My hope is that we can bootstrap in terms of our cognitive ability now to do the right thing and elect a person that's certainly not savior material, but is a better business person, I believe, and has already surrounded himself with better people already, and already been quite presidential in terms of visiting other nations. And I'm just really so I'm voting Trump. And like I said, I wasn't looking for a savior in Trump. I wasn't looking for a savior in Bush. So anyway, getting back to that one thought in terms of Bush, a related thought in terms of the Bushes. There are plenty of Kurdish next of kin that aren't willing to blame George W. Bush or number 43 for as being the source of the world's ills. You know, they're just not willing to do that because they know that there are graves, mass graves lined with decayed bodies that died from biological warfare at the hands of one Saddam Hussein. So, like I said, though, in order to effectuate change, it must be more than what you would refrain from doing in terms of inside of this nation. Now, I'll be the first person to say that if you're a Muslim, and I haven't studied whether Sharia law applies to all Muslims or not, but if it does, you're in the wrong country. You have no right to coexist or cohabitate with our Constitution, because it just, they're incompatible entirely. If you subscribe to Sharia law, just there's plenty of sand in the Middle East. There's plenty of places in Africa that may be fertile. There's certainly plenty of fertile. There's plenty of fertile land in Asia, where you're quite welcome. In terms of belittling women and considering them half their voice to be that half that of a man's and so forth. But Sharia law is not welcome here. That's the bottom line. All right. So I'm going to play a portion of a clip in just a moment for you that is posted on Facebook, and you can still find it too. And then we're going to discuss the excerpt prior to moving on. I'm going to go ahead and open it up now. And this is actually one of my heroes. This particular hero, actually, interestingly enough, isn't an American citizen, although I hope he will be one day. Absolutely hope he will be one day. So actually, I'm going to jump over to Google real quick. The gentleman is from the island of Aruba. And I am so hoping that he will be the be able to, if he so aspires to become an American, because he is the, he epitomizes American exceptionalism. And I'm going to go ahead and play that clip for you in just a second. Give me just a second, and I'll pull that up, or I'll cue that up. One moment. One second. I just had it a moment ago. I apologize. I think this is it, actually. No, it's actually their GoFundMe page. But the name of the business, not the business, but the service is called Raising Men Lawn Care Service. And Rodney Smith Jr., I still need to find this. Need to find this, because this video is amazing, and this link, like I said, personifies, gosh, it was in Google, and then I don't know if it was on their Facebook page, but Raising Men Lawn Care Service, let me see. Okay, so there was a Today story. A lot of people have covered them or whatever, but I really was looking to find their original video. Let me see if this is it. This might be it, actually. Okay, it is.
Yeah, I saw an elderly man cutting grass, and he looked like he was struggling. So it came to me, I should do something about it. And that's when I decided to cut free lawns for the elderly, disabled, and single-parent mothers for free. I'm capable of cutting grass because I'm young. I'm able. A lot of elderly people are not able. My name is Rodney Smith, Jr. I'm from the island of Bermuda. Well, in Bermuda, everybody's just friendly, you know. They give back when they can. And that's what drives me, to help people. I'm here in Alabama, A&M. I graduated this month. And I look to go back to get my master's in social work.
Anyway, I think you've heard enough. That was just so powerful and so moving. And I've actually been in touch with Rodney Smith Jr. on Facebook. We've chatted a little bit about how we can help one another in terms of our services and our ministries. Because what I'm hoping to build is a bridge from India to the United States for kids that, not just India per se, but I'd like it to kind of, to provide a footing there, or a cornerstone, so to speak, in India, where their kids can come over here and study at our universities once they are old enough and ready to do that. And I don't want the kids – it's interesting because my wife and I, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 kids right now that we sponsor around the world. Two are from the Dominican Republic. One is from India. Another one is from Central America. And one day I began thinking that these kids need a bridge from our sponsoring them on a monthly basis. They're going to need a bridge to achieve a college degree one day, if they so desire. So I got a hold of Rodney Smith Jr., and I hope to work with him in the future once I get that up and rolling. It's called Coattails of Hope. And anyway, I'm just hoping to get that going. So I wanted your thoughts. American exceptionalism, I stated, is the ability to refrain oneself from violence. And I'm not talking about self-defense here, because that's another story altogether. Because you have every right, as long as you weren't out looking for a fight, to defend yourself in public, in the public arena, as well as inside of your home. Now, a lot of people will argue that guns should be kept in the house, that our firearms should be kept in the house. Well, tell that to the people that consider Mayor Giuliani's stop and frisk, that they're not, that they weren't okay with that, that it was somehow unconstitutional. Well, why is it unconstitutional to stop someone and make sure they don't have a firearm on them illegally? Why is that unconstitutional? It ended up saving tons of lives. And the more lives that we can save, the better. Even though that's part of the less narrative, right? But it's certainly how we live on the right. It's not just a narrative for us. So American exceptionalism is the ability, like I said, to refrain oneself from violence in light of a lifetime of having to face diametrically opposing views, religious or otherwise. So American exceptionalism, too, I think we've gotten away from it in the sense that, by and large, in the sense that a lot of kids in the United States are just so spoiled today, and not just coming from homes with a lot of money, but also coming from homes that are definitely below low-level income homes, but they have enough somehow to have an iPhone and all the latest PlayStation games or gaming units or whatever. We've gotten away from, I remember my parents, I hail from the state of South Dakota, and I'm proud of that. And I love the fact that my state fought, they were on the correct side of history where slavery was concerned. We were one of, I think, 38 states that opposed slavery, even to the point of sacrificing lives, their own lives, so that slavery would be done away with. And so I'm proud of that. So I think it was only, I want to say, 14 states or something like that, 16 states that actually had slaves, and then the other states went to war, obviously, for the right reason, because slavery is wrong, and it's evil. And so anyway, where I was going with that was my parents, I was pretty young. I can't remember how old I was exactly, but I remember living in West Des Moines, Iowa. And the winters are pretty harsh up there. And I remember my parents actually, you know, having my brother and I, who is almost 2 years younger than I am, take on a paper route together. And the area in which we lived was a large enough section where the Sunday papers got pretty heavy. They were fairly bulky, and the bags were pretty heavy that we used to carry. So we were pretty young. So we had to, and then there was a collection day where my parents would drive us around in our cars, and we were bundled up, and we'd have to get out and go up and collect from the individual subscribers the subscription rate. So we had to deal with money once a week, and we had to deal with some physical labor. We had to deal with excellence and where the newspaper ended up located instead of just tossing it up in a snowdrift somewhere and hoping that some old lady was able to traverse 10 or 20 feet of snow or whatever that had been plowed into her yard. You know, excellence in childhood is kind of a cool thing. So we had a great time as kids too. We would be outside the majority of the time until until Atari came out, the original Atari, and which was a lot of fun too. It's not altogether evil. Gaming isn't altogether evil. Although I think a lot of the games today are truly of the dark side, if you will. Now, in terms of shooting games, like hunting games and so forth, that's arguable. All I know is I hail from a state, the state of South Dakota, at one point it used to be the pheasant ringneck neck pheasant capital of the world. And we also had a lot of duck hunters, a fair number of deer hunters, some antelope out in the western portion of the state. And my dad, I had to take my first hunter safety course at the age of 12. And I'm so thankful that I did that. It was a great experience. And it was a nice bond, nice time to bond with my dad as well, and who I almost lost in the last year due to clogged arteries and so forth. But thank God he's still here. And he worked. Actually, my dad's a great example of American exceptionalism. He worked for 31 and a half years with Bell Systems. Started out in Northwestern Bell, and then he ended up in Southern Bell. But you know what he started out doing to feed his family? I remember these spikes that he used to attach to his boots. And why did he have them? Because he had to climb poles. Summer or winter, didn't matter. Negative 50 or 60 wind chills, it wouldn't matter. He had a family to feed. He never once complained. Came home with his face frozen. My mom was was actually an LPN, and she worked in the medical field for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years or something like that, to that extent. But they never complained about having to work. And then my dad would come home on the weekends, and he would rebuild automobiles to save money for our family, American exceptionalism. Now, I'm a fourth-generation American. So I wasn't around, my dad wasn't around, my grandfather wasn't around, and his father wasn't around for the Civil War, which is which I guess in one sense for civil rights, the civil rights of African Americans, obviously. But we weren't around. So who do you blame, you know, and how can you just throw Whitey in a bag and collectively speaking and come away having served up justice rather than injustice in so many ways. My family, interestingly enough, after I left home at the age of 18, when I joined the military and went to college, interestingly enough, I began dating shortly thereafter. I met a Latina, and I married her. We had two kids together, and then we went through a subsequent divorce, which is horrible. And then I remarried again, but this time a Dominican lady. And so the last 20 years or so, it's just kind of worked out that way. I still fish. I'm looking to get back into hunting again. I don't know any farmer or outdoorsman, avid outdoorsman or otherwise, that ever actually turned his or her firearm or firearms on anyone. 99% of gun-related deaths, or crime rather, 99%, possibly even greater, of firearm-related crime takes place in urban America, which is a tragedy, because I've been waiting for so long for African Americans to step up and befriend one another to such an intense, deep level that they were able to bootstrap and that we would be able to help them and work together to build a, you know, to build an actually build a better America. That's kind of what we're looking for. And my hope and my dream is to create a film studio eventually. And I'm creating a documentary, and I hope that's my ticket to a film studio. And then I hope to hire people like Rodney Smith Jr. from Aruba that started Raising Men Lawn Care Service. And if you get a chance to watch his initial video again, just listen. His words are dripping of humility. I mean, in terms of, I'm able, and there are a lot of elderly people that aren't able. There are a lot of single women that aren't able. There are a lot of people that are disabled that aren't able. And this guy came from Aruba, and he's schooling Americans, people that claim to be Americans, on American exceptionalism. Rodney Smith Jr., he's a king. And, you know, another thing in terms of this upcoming election, I think it's the opposite of American exceptionalism to just be looking to quote-unquote pop America's cherry back-to-back based on the fact that Hillary Clinton may become America's first female president. It's just wrong. The Honorable Martin Luther King Jr. was looking for people with, you know, really decent scruples, regardless of skin tone. And I don't think he, not that he would have voted for Trump, but he certainly wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, and I don't think he would have voted for Barack Obama either. Not just to make history. I think it's a great idea on paper, but it didn't pan out all that well for us. We ended up with a president that, a president, and a Justice Department, if you want to call it that, and an IRS that waged war against a small faction of America, like 2% of America, you know, or whatever, just because those people didn't see eye to eye. I'm not going to tell the president. It's not my place to tell the president what Jesus he should serve. If he should serve the Jesus that I believe in, that's absolutely of dark skin tone or brown, which is just doesn't matter anyway, because God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. But it's not my job to say you don't have a right to believe that 1 Thessalonians 4:6 is about a Robin Hood verse. I don't have the right to tell him that. Now I do have the right, since he's invited himself to the table in using scripture references, I do have the right to say, sir, with all due respect, 1 Thessalonians 4:6 sits perfectly nestled within its spiritual habitat of 1 Thessalonians 4:1-8. I do have a right to tell him that. Yes, sirree. And he doesn't have to accept it. But I'm just hoping that atheists are listening out there tonight. I'm hoping that we have listeners from the LGBT community, and so forth and so on and so forth and so on. But you should take Donald Trump's words pretty seriously if you're part of the LGBT community. And Donald Trump, he just throws these words out there. I don't believe he's this dastardly devil that everyone thinks he is. He should have worded things differently. He needs a speechwriter. He wouldn't be the only person to run or succeed to the, you know, in terms of the White House, a White House bid that needed a speechwriter. But he has already surrounded himself with exemplary folk. And if he just keeps doing that, he's already tapped Mike Pence, who's amazing. He's an incredibly stand-up gentleman. And then you've got, and here's the cool thing about Mike Pence. He didn't belittle women that have had abortions. He knows that God is a forgiving God. The biblical God is a forgiving God. But I think he also understands that we're better than even that. Not better than God, but better than just continuing to make the same, or to make the same choices time in and time out and throughout the ages and just never change. So anyway, so now Mike Pence is obviously in the picture, has been for a while now, named the VP, Donald Trump's right-hand man, so to speak. And then, interestingly enough, it'd be great if the Donald became president and called in Benjamin Carson, Alan Keyes, Deneen Borelli. Oh, did this middle-aged white guy just name three people with black mothers and black fathers? Why, yes, he did, America. Okay, so if his first three appointees were Dr. Carson, Alan Keyes, Deneen Borelli, and then he decided to roll in and tap Trey Gowdy, among others, I think it'd be awesome. And I think we should have the telltale sign in the beginning with Barack Hussein Obama, referring to his team of quote-unquote experts as czars. Like, really? Who does that? I just call them cabinet members, but czars, really? I mean, like, really? So American exceptionalism finds a way to bring people together in truth, in spirit, and in truth. For example, and I talked about this in my last program, Dylann Roof was obviously demon possessed. And Nidal Hassan is obviously demon possessed. Now, what he could have done is the president could have, why wouldn't the leader of the free world go live and stand up in front of the entire nation and say, Dylann Roof, this is not how we roll. Nidal Hassan, this is not how we roll as Americans. Because American exceptionalism is the ability, American exceptionalism in part is the ability to refrain oneself from violence in light of a lifetime, having to face a lifetime of diametrically opposing views, religious or otherwise, barring Sharia law. I have friends that are Sikhs. I have two excellent friends that are Sikh. And that's why it just pained me, grieved me so deeply when up in Wisconsin, a person shot a bunch of Sikhs or, you know, killed a handful of Sikhs a few years back. That's just being an utter, the term redneck or it's just ridiculous. I'm an outdoorsman, but you got to do your homework. And you don't shoot someone that claims to be Muslim anyway. You pray for them. I just sat with a Muslim couple after a Christian concert about a month or two ago, gave them some information, tried to love on them. But tragically, we're reaching an age, a world age, so to speak, where people have to sleep with one eye open. Out in public, the police officers, they're being attacked from next to every angle, pretty much. They're not getting... They get, you know, that old adage, better late than never. No, not in beloved number 44's case. You know, in terms of the Fort Hood massacre in 2009, Alan West should have been the keynote speaker to cover the Fort Hood massacre mass funeral. Alan West. Oh, did I just name another African-American with a black mother and a black father? Yes, I did. Why, yes, I did, America. All right. So here's another thing in terms of American exceptionalism. Obviously, like I said, bootstrapping is one thing. Absolutely one portion of the picture, bootstrapping. If you're not willing to work, put in 60, 70, 80, 90, even 100-hour weeks, occasionally, then you're spiritually not an American. You're not. Look at the Latinos that come here, the dreamers. It's not just Barack Hussein Obama's plan to see dreamers succeed. The ones that are already here that haven't committed a crime definitely deserve a shake or a chance at life here with their families. Now, in terms of going forward, I would say we would bring home much of our forward deployment in terms of our troops, place them about 20 meters apart, next to shoulder with shotguns, with beanbag rounds and rubber bullets, and secure the border 10 meters apart, let's say, at night. Use our military, but have clipboards. Don't shoot to kill, but have clipboards where, hey, you want to come over here? Sign this clipboard. Are you coming over here for educational purposes? Are you coming here to work? Are you coming here to in hopes of bringing your family over one day? That kind of thing. But American exceptionalism is about the business of bootstrapping. That's right. I had chronic bronchitis, pneumonia 4 times in my life. One time it was viral pneumonia, where I coughed up blood for 2 months and it almost killed me. And a car hit me doing 65 miles an hour, and I still managed to work 80 and 90 hour weeks since 2009. Why? Because I want a better life. I want to be able to go on 2 or 3 vacations a year instead of 1. I don't want the man telling me that I can only take a week's vacation after my first year. What if I want 2? What if I need 2 weeks personally? And that goes for Latinos and Asian Americans and African Americans and Indian Americans and so forth. I want you to take more than 1 vacation a year if you're working hard. Take 2 up to 14 days, so to speak, in your first year, God forbid. And God forbid you should get wealthy. Good for you. That's another portion of the definition of American exceptionalism, creative, our ability as humans to create something, anything, rather than whining about safe space and beating a tambourine on Wall Street and crapping on sidewalks and in farmers' driveways in North Dakota. Create something. Let me ask you a really, really, really pointed question to the liberal left. Since you're so against and you don't believe the top 2% has done its fair share in the United States of America, are you willing to target the founder of the selfie stick? And if not, that just means that you're a duplicitous dirtbag that probably should leave the United States so we can bring some dreamers in without a criminal history, which there are many. A large percentage of the people that I've met that have come over here to achieve the American dream, per se, didn't have, or don't have, as far as I know, criminal histories or any history of criminality. So, but all it takes is one. All it takes is one to shoot a woman in San Francisco on a pier, and for that family to lose their daughter, a wife, a sister, a mother in one fell swoop. American exceptionalism is the ability to realize that when one person, like my co-writer happens to be an African-American from Detroit, and he sounds white over the phone, but when he went to a job interview in Central Florida, interestingly enough, when he showed up, they weren't hiring. They took a look at him, and he could tell by the facial expression that it was a demonic bias. But when he came back and told me about it the next day, I broke down crying because we were already putting in 100-hour weeks screenwriting and working day jobs. I actually started to cry, and I said to my one of my best friends and co-writers, I said, no one plays my brother like that. Let's get in the car and go up and talk to him and be like, hey, if you won't at least interview my brother in Christ Jesus. Oh, did I just say that? I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry. If you want to at least interview him and give him, apply the same interview standards and application standards that you would to anyone else, then you should probably close your business up. That's right, I said it. And here's the crazy thing. I think they were tied to a group that had a huge Confederate flag. And again, to each his own, because there are probably peaceable people that have flown the Confederate flag before. Now, here's the thing, though. I think it should be relegated to museums, like Nikki Haley of South Carolina. I do believe she made the right move, because it was the flag of the South that was flown during a tumultuous, demonic encounter with a would-be free world or free nation in its entirety. All right, I'll be back in just a moment. I'm Dakota Lone Star. Check me out on Facebook or just Dakota Lone Star. I'm also on Twitter at @DOC_OTA Lone Star. That's at DOC rather than DAK on Twitter. On Facebook, it's Dakota, just like North Dakota or South Dakota. And the word Lone Star. We are also online at 40and28.weebly.com. That's 40and28. W, E is an echo, E is an echo, B is in Bravo, L is in Lima, Y is in Yankee.com, 40and28weebly.com. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a 3-minute break and grab some water, and I'll be back with you in just a moment. Again, the guest call number is 929-477-4090. I'll be back in 3 minutes. Thank you, America. All right, guys, I'm back. Thank you so much for listening tonight to Cantankerous with a Cause. My name is Dakota Lone Star. The call number tonight is 929-477-4090, and the topic is American exceptionalism. What is your definition of American exceptionalism? In particular, I'd love to hear from you. Now, remember, you can visit me online at www.40and28.weebly.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at @DOC_OTA Lone Star. And I'm also on Facebook, Dakota Lone Star, D-A-K in that case. So Dakota Lone Star on Facebook. All right, so I guess the other thing about American exceptionalism, if I sit down and I really think about it, and I'm going to go back and pan through this program for gold, so to speak, for my documentary. But it's interesting because when I was a kid in the late 60s, actually very early 70s and into the 80s, I was a young person as well, obviously. Graduated from high school in 1986. I'm not going to give you too much information right now, but interestingly enough, I remember a time, I remember a juncture, I remember in the United States of America when a person could hand another person an invite and it not be considered a hostile act, it drives me crazy that there was this kid, right, who, God forbid, someone invited that child to an Easter egg hunt, and then the child ran home to his daddy, to their safe space, and, Dad, I didn't think that in America were able to tell you that you needed to go to church, that you had to go to church, rather. No, an invite, if you don't know the difference, it's sad, and that's tragic, actually, because it speaks volumes in terms of the rest of the world and what they go through on a daily basis. If you don't know the difference between a dictate and an invite, here's to I'll raise my glass to hoping that you'll learn the differences soon, or key difference soon at least. Well, it used to be a day when you'd come up to me, and if you handed me an invite to your, let's say, your mosque, for instance, and you were, and you realized that I had two boys, 15, and anyway, in their teens and early teens, and you said, "Hey, Dakota, I understand you have two boys and they enjoy soccer, and you know we're having this great get together tomorrow night at our mosque, and here's the flyer, and I'd love to see you there. I'd love to see your boys there." I'm not going to consider that a microaggression, for God's sake. I'm just going to shake the person's hand, take the flyer, say thank you. I'm going to go home and recycle that because Islam, in my opinion, although not altogether violent, quite possibly, is adheres far too closely, I believe. And who wouldn't if you claim to be a Muslim to Sharia law? And again, I'm going to study that later, but a little bit more. But I'm not going to get upset. I'm not going to be dirty to the person. I'm not going to be mouthy. I'm not going to be demeaning. I'm just going to shake their hand, say thank you. I'm going to go home and recycle the paper. That's the way it was when I was growing up. And then on the flip side of the coin, if I did have someone that was telling me, call me names and being vulgar with me or whatever, I would just say, "Hey, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Go find a new friend, pal." Out of my face. Just go find a new friend. Whatever. Go. Bye-bye. Say la vie. Who needs friends when half of them are enemies? Anyway, so that's another, as an American exceptionalist, you need to be committed to the possibility that, you know, a Mormon or an atheist or a Jehovah's Witness definitely is going to approach you one day. And, you know, and God bless them for their tenacity. I don't believe they're correct. I believe every one of those that I just named are cults. But having said that, they have a right to be out there. And you know, if you don't want them knocking on your door, just put a sign that says no soliciting, no religious material or otherwise, whatever, and kind of leave it at that. If you're leaving your house and they happen to, you know, you could just say, "Hey, look, you know, I'm an atheist, and I share this land with you, but I'm going to have to ask you to leave because I'm not interested in your material. Have a nice day." Ooh, that cost us so much, right, as a nation. Now, American exceptionalism, another benchmark figure or fact in terms of American exceptionalism is that when you are an activist, let's assume for a moment that there were free roaming elephants in the United States of America, and I was key member of Save the Elements, or Save the Elephants, rather. I was an integral part of Save the Elephants, even. That's my platform. I'm out, and I'm like, we have to save the elephants. Then you better be for elephants. It's so much easier to call on a 15-year-old political operative in a red bow and say, "Honey, what's your question?" "Well, how would you help us as females feel better about our bodies regardless of our..." Well, yeah, of course. Of course there's a problem there. And most women that have a little extra weight are way sexier. I'm not talking about, you know, actual obesity, which people need to deal with. And they're there a lot of the time because of their own decisions. I'm not going to be rude to them either. I'm going to help them because I used to be a personal fitness trainer. I'll help as many people as I can along the way. But right now I'm putting in 100-hour weeks and or 90-hour weeks, and it looks like it's getting ready to increase based on the fact that I need to pound out this documentary soon. But another, you know, form of American exceptionalism Let's see, what did I cover to get? Or what have I covered, rather, and what was I looking to cover? God, you know, America really needs help. So to automatically assume there are 8 fallacies floating around about people that the left considers dangerous because they believe that our only job is to maintain power, our only vision is to maintain power and not pass it on to anyone, particularly of another persuasion or ethnicity. That's bull crap. That's absolute, utter bull crap. Does racism still exist? Absolutely. Absolutely. My son faced it the other day. My son happens to be half Puerto Rican. I call him my Dakota Rican. And a kid said to him, hey, when Donald Trump is president, he's going to send... See, and that's why Donald needs a speechwriter. And he shouldn't just, you know, open his mouth. Now, in terms of launching nuclear weapons, you guys are just conspiracy theorists at best. And he wouldn't be any more dangerous than certainly not any more dangerous than Hillary Clinton. And finally today, Rush Limbaugh begged the question, why is she all of a sudden, and I had been asking this question forever, why would someone that has a private server all of a sudden go from security, you know, our security and our information being, you know, the importance of security where our information, national interests are concerned, go from, oh, that's cool to have a personal server, to, I know without a shadow of doubt that it was Russia and Putin's going to get a message from us. What? What? So you're schizophrenic, Ben, you're telling me. You have dual personalities. You're okay with being inadequate, but then you're willing to blame it on... That's just like saying, oh, the gun show loophole or whatever is responsible for the trigger men in Chicago that are killing other African Americans at, you know, record clips. If you're a trigger man, you're responsible for your own... Hold on a second, please.
I told you 2 hours. I'll see you in a little bit. Go get a water.
Okay. Basically, what was I saying now? And if Black Lives Matter, hashtag BLM, and they do, we shouldn't have to answer that question for you, then create a culture where your men, by and large, married men, aren't out at all hours in the night, a portion or a significant percentage anyway, unless your son has 105 fever and you damn well need, you just ran out of Tylenol and children's Motrin so that you can alternate and do the responsible thing as a parent. If you're out at 3 a.m. in the morning, it's not going to look good anyway. God created the greater light to light the day and the lesser light to light the night, and there's a reason for both. Unless you're working in the middle of the night, like so many Hispanic and Latino dreamers do, they work their day job and then they work a night job too, God bless them. I would trade the world's dreamers for 30% of America yesterday. And that's what we get for running with this notion over the course of 10 years that everybody should receive a trophy. We've kind of constructed our own demise in one sense. We have. If in fact we do fall. Now, some people have been talking about a Trojan horse as of late in terms of primarily military-aged males being the migrants, you know, and not all that many women and children accompanying them, that I do find that kind of strange myself. Why aren't we seeing more wives and grandmothers and daughters and children being foisted upon the Western world, so to speak, or the West? Right, so American exceptionalism. American exceptionalism is not looking for a fight. If a 911 operator tells you that they don't need you to continue pursuing someone, then stop pursuing that person. If a police officer damn well drop your firearm and you don't drop it, I don't know anyone from urban America, from countless hoods in the United States of America, anyone from that area that if they had a gun that was about to be trained on them, if someone was raising a sidearm or a shotgun, that they wouldn't try to get the shot off first against that person, you're a liar. You're either completely retarded or you're lying. I'm being honest, folks. And over 99% of firearm crime occurs in urban America. So Black Lives Matter, grow half a nut like Giuliani had. And if you consider it like stop and frisk unconstitutional, really? Really? Come out to the country. Come out unannounced. Well, that's not how you guys do business, how the left does business, but come out unannounced. Come out any day of the week, any hour of the week, any minute. Well, probably not tonight, because we do enjoy our sleep, and we enjoy sleeping with both eyes closed, unlike SD of New Jersey, case SD versus MJR, the Muslim Moroccan woman that I stood up for because she was being beaten severely by her Sharia shank, and she brought it to an American court system who failed her. It's not about the implementation of Sharia law, Eugene Robinson. You're pretty slow there, but I'm a little bit slow. It's about that woman being able to sleep with both eyes open because we're chauvinists, right? And we're Islamophobes. I wasn't blogging to support her I don't even know what her faith is, but I'm sure it's probably still Islam. She sought justice in the United States of America after moving over here from Morocco. Sounds like she was almost a child bride in one sense and an arranged marriage. Well, we could talk about that in another program. But Eugene Robinson, you're wrong, buddy. We were talking about the implementation of Sharia law within our framework and Constitution and Congress. We were concerned about the woman having to sleep with one eye open for 15 months, an additional 15 months, after a blowhard of a judge made the wrong call and didn't put a restraining order. Not that that would have stopped the guy anyway, the pig. And if you're willing to go out and vote for Hillary Clinton in this election, you're a whore. You know why? Because she's taking money from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, possibly Nigeria. There's a billionaire there by the name of Gil. I call him Gil Gilly Boy Chagoury. Chagoury. Gilbert. Billionaire from Nigeria. And allegedly he asked Hillary Clinton to keep Boko Haram off of a terrorist list, or a list intended for terrorists the world over. Boko Haram doesn't treat little girls. So if you want to side with Hillary Clinton, who's taking money from the devil, I wouldn't take a penny. I don't care if my foundation failed. I'd rather not take a red cent from a demon-possessed, quote-unquote, adult that's down with genital mutilation and sex slavery and marrying 12-year-old girls and women being your property. I'm not going to take a penny from you. And you're not going to receive a penny from me, for God's sake. I don't care what kind of coalition we built over the years. If you can't treat women equally, and you can't stand, and in similar fashion, you can't stand for women all over the world, then you're a feminist liar. You're a whore for bedding down with someone that's bedded down with Chigaris of the world. It's so much easier to point to a girl, a 15-year-old girl that wears a red bow in a crowd and say, "Hey, you sweetie in the red bow," at a town hall meeting in Pennsylvania. Come to find out the father of the girl in the red bow, none of the other girls had bows in their hair. I don't know many 15-year-old girls that wear bows in their hair anyway today, because they're so down with Beyonce and a half-white rock star and others, among others. So this girl gets, you know, tapped for her question. "Madam Secretary, women really struggle in the United States of America, women and girls, with their how they perceive themselves and their figures and so forth. But my dad's the leading Democrat in this county, and he helped me construct this question." And then you could hear Hillary in the background. Oh, thank you, sweetie. Oh, that's so sweet. What a great question. But it was so chock full of bullcaca, the response. But then you turn around and you go to bed with a Chigauri, for all practical purposes, Gilbert Chigauri, and take money for your foundation from a Gilbert Chigauri, so that you can... Boko Haram is of the devil, just like John Jaweed was, just like Al-Qaeda is. Other offshoots, you know, probably from A to Z, Al-Qaeda to John Jaweed, Boko Haram is back at the beginning of the alphabet. They're demon-possessed groups that are just displacing. And all the Bruce Springsteen concerts in the world aren't going to stop it, sweetie. You have to have the tenacity, the spinal aptitude, and the intestinal fortitude for handfuls of A-10 strafing runs via satellite image when they're traveling from village to village to displace displace hundreds of others inhabitants. Okay, then we have American exceptionalism in terms of being creative, like I said. If someone doesn't want to bake a cake, walk around the corner, and I'm sure that someone gleefully will bake you a cake. A modern family bakery. I'm sure they're quite numerous. Just walk around the corner, less than a stone's throw away. And they'll be like, "Oh, sure, we'll bake your cake." Well, good for you. Do whatever you want. Start your own churches. Start your own scouting organizations. But leave the 3% of America alone that actually knows Jesus Christ and is known of him. Leave him alone. It's okay. Start your churches. We've come to a point where we're not under this fog any longer, most of us, and misunderstanding that we're outnumbered 96-4. It's not new to us. Only 3% of Americans are, for the most part, actual biblical Christians that wouldn't harm a person, that work 70, 80, 90, 100 hours a week in an attempt to better their lives and better the nation that's given them the opportunity to do so. Okay, I think I've covered about everything that I want to cover tonight in terms of American exceptionalism. Oh, in closing, American exceptionalism is alive and somewhat well. It's got a pretty high fever. And it's on the ropes, which is really, really sad. Because wouldn't you rather live in an America where someone actually smiled, a genuine smile at you, when you handed them an invite, and they said, "Thank you very much. Have a nice day. I'll read this later." Wouldn't you rather live in that kind of America? Wouldn't you rather live in an America where if the president, you didn't agree with the president whatsoever, and that president wasn't willing to use the IRS as a lapdog, an attack dog, in the form of a Lois Lerner worm, or Lois Lerner that became the Lois Lerner worm, and a hard drive crashed, probably the same way that Reverend Al Sharpton's would be pertinent tax files for two seasons, not just one, but two, went up in flames. Really? Really? So maybe the Lois Lerner worm is an arsonist as well. Maybe we'll just come to find out. It seems to kind of follow suit because under this Justice Department, they seem to only be targeting people that are... and, you know, Jesus said, you shall be hated for my name's sake. And Jesus did everything for his name's sake in terms of having a good name. You know, it used to be in America in terms of American exceptionalism. My grandfather was one on my mom's side, one of the people that put in 60, 70, 80, 90-hour weeks for a long time, bootstrapping in South Korea, right? There's probably some of that, though. But bootstrapping and purchasing an insurance agency that was underwater, not as bad as the Titanic, but he took a look at it, purchased it, worked hard enough and smart enough for it to be right side up and begin floating again. And then my cousins bought it, and they did really well with it until they retired and passed on, because my mom's adopted, so I have cousins that were, gosh, if they're still alive, they'd be like 98 as cousins or whatever, got a couple of them. But okay, so American exceptionalism. American exceptionalism knows no color. The Honorable Martin Luther King Jr., the people that are willing to vote for a person because they appear to be black, even though they're a half-white rock star, or have a vagina, have missed the finish line that the Honorable Martin Luther King Jr. was attempting to establish. It's like starting a full marathon, 26.2, running the first mile and then hitting the wall. And you know what, if you're a runner, you know what that means. You just completely run out of everything and you have to stop, basically, out of gas. You just hit a point. Well, actually, there's a point where you can't really feel anything and you can continue running another 10 miles after that sometimes. But it'd be like starting a marathon and knowing that you could finish and having the ability to finish and then stopping after the first mile. Because we've erred on the correct side of history. Really? When I find someone with scruples... Now, I'll give you an example of, in terms of, I don't know, in terms of Democratic women. Nancy Pelosi is a complete fruitcake with an IQ of maybe 79 on her best day. Sheila Jackson Lee is the same way. There's this woman that claimed to be an American Indian or African American, a couple of them, or one of each, and they weren't, and they were lying. but... Lieberman, Joseph Lieberman, might have been a pretty good choice for you all to have put forward at a certain point. Oh, that's right, he's a Jew. So, you know, just he would have faced the same scrutiny in many ways that Romney faced, supposedly, even though he never brought up his Mormon faith. But now you can tell he's a lapdog at a latter point. All right. Call number 929-477-4090. You're listening to Cantankers with a Cause exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. It's really strange that I haven't gotten any calls for 3 nights. It's almost like somebody's shadowing my program. It's kind of odd. Why? Because I understand American exceptionalism and I just happen to be a middle-aged white guy? Oh, God forbid. God forbid. I mentioned it last night or in my last program. Stop blocking roadways, BLM. Bowel movement. BLM. Stop blocking roadways because your grandmother or grandfather or aunt or uncle or might be sick and need a clear route to a hospital one day. Are you that stupid? Are you that stupid? Highways and byways. Yeah, I think you are that stupid. And now I'm wondering how many of you were paid $1,500 to walk out and block a road by indirectly via George Soros. Actually, directly, I've never really been keen on the word indirectly. But Hillary Clinton funding violence, there's an argument out there for that now. Based on the Project Veritas videos, which is pretty awesome. But here's the thing, you know what that proved once again, the Veritas videos? It proved once again that there are people that are above the law. How many times are we going to go around and around this, like, I'm reminded of Meet the Parents, you know, Jack, round and round we go, Jack, round and round we go. When are we going to get off this crazy train or tell them that we want a divorce, file for divorce? When is North Dakota to Texas and picking up a couple handful of states on either side of that line going to tell the left coast and the northeast that we want a divorce? Is it going to come at a time that that no one foresaw, had foreseen, you know, in terms of bullets flying again? I hope not, because that's certainly not American exceptionalism. If North Dakota to Texas, we ran a perfect straight, which God willing we'll do sooner and later, I think we could set up a pretty cool constitution that would allow for you, if you're a Libby, a fluffball Libby, that the only way that you could come and reside with us is, take a couple lie detector tests, like, are you down with forced conversion? And that doesn't only apply to Islam, that applies to quote-unquote Christians today. In rather high places that believe in slapping fines on people and leaning on filmmakers. So the American exceptionalist would never lean on a filmmaker ever, unless it involved child pornography, in which case the death penalty should ensue inside of maybe 2 weeks, I don't know. And the same goes for Nadel Hassan and Dylan Roof, because I'm an equal opportunity cowboy. Dylan Roof and Nadel Hassan should be fertilizing daffodils at this point. Yep, I said it. And it should take place during the middle of one of the late night shows. Just throw up a disclaimer saying this is demon-possessed Dylan Roof. No, you don't even have to say that. You don't have to go there. You don't have to get religious. Thou shalt not kill. It's not the mark of any civilized nation. Thou shalt not kill. Pretty simple. Except for when you're the President of the United States and you want to quote verses out of context once or twice a year on international television. And then you don't have the guts to get up and say, Dylan Roof, that's not how we roll. And then in the next the same breath say, Boston Marathon bombers, that's not how we roll. And I'm going to bring the full weight of our Justice Department to bear on anyone and everyone, hear me clearly, that this is not how we roll. Don't kill someone just because they don't believe what we believe. We don't even slap additional fines on them or lean on filmmakers. All right, if you have not seen the movie The Book Thief, see it. It was in theaters a few, couple years back, two or three years back, The Book Thief. And The Book Thief is the Book Thief Award for the last nearly decade goes to Barack Hussein Obama. Yep, that's right. He leaned on filmmakers of Indian descent. He leaned on a filmmaker, an Egyptian Coptic Christian that made a video, and even blamed actual savagery on a video. See, here's the real problem. The scourge of the earth, is liberalism. I am Dakota Lone Star. I've been dismantling liberalism since 1967, and yes, I was born that way. Remember to check me out online at www.40and28.weebly.com. On Twitter, been having some fun over there lately, at @DOC_OTA Lone Star. And on Facebook, Dakota Lone Star. God save America via Deneen Borelli, Benjamin Carson, Alan Keyes, Trey Gowdy. Just making up some silly little song here because I'm tired. I'm about ready to vomit. And I wonder where God stands in terms of all of the terrorism committed against the unborn. Can you honestly tell me that over 90% of abortions are required for the life or health of the mother? And or rape or incest. Can you tell me that? You want to swing those numbers for me? Want to work it out for me? Come on. Just got to be an intern at the sound of my voice. That's efficient with numbers. Come on. Okay, American exceptionalism wouldn't feign disgust. If something doesn't disgust them. I'm not disgusted by much of anything any longer because Dakota Lone Star actually, I have seen a lot of things in my life already. Started out in South Dakota, moved to Iowa and to a border town in Minnesota. Didn't see anything there so much. Kind of broke away and started going off to college, and then I learned in North Carolina that half the United Methodist North Carolina, First United Methodist North Carolina pastorate was down with marrying homosexuals. To each his own, if you want to go that way. If you can't find a church to be married in, just create one. Why not? And then it's just between you and God at a certain point. But as for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord. And his name is above all names, and interestingly enough, rightfully so, because he's never broken his word, ever. And I just had to kind of throw that out there. I thought it was kind of fun. From The Sandlot, that I watched with my boys when they were younger. All right, I'm going to leave you with a little funny, here tonight. When my eldest son was just a wee one, not a wee one, but knee high to a grasshopper, so to speak, the movie A Night at the Roxbury came out, and my kids, there's a couple little scenes in there, whatever, but my son the next day had left his clothes on the bedroom floor, and I said, "Hey, why are your socks on the bedroom floor?" And he looked at me, and he wagged his head at me, and he said, I said, "Put your socks in the clothes basket or the bin." And he wagged his head at me in his hand, and he said, "Whatever you say, T.J. Hooker." Okay, there's my fun for the night. And imagine a little shorty that's like 6 years old saying that to his parent. You know, you're not supposed to laugh, but you can't help but laugh at that point. So, anyway, and remember this. When Barack Hussein Obama and his administration and the Justice Department was blaming videos for actual savagery, he was being a strong man with North Korea. And in terms of the subsophomoric film, The Interview, look over here. Here's your pendulum, kiddies, neo-Nazi children. Look over here. I'm supporting The Interview. While a guy's under house arrest for making a video that I disagree with. Look over here, America. I'm not going to go in and question the makers of 13 Hours, Benghazi 13 Hours or whatever. Look over here, America. I'm not going to lean on Dinesh D'Souza and parade him in front of as many state-sponsored psychiatric doctors as it takes to deem him troubled, an American of East Indian roots, much darker than most white people, and actually probably darker than beloved number 44. Having being from India, he probably had a dark mother and a dark father, and no whitey involved, you know, in the mix. So, anyway, American exceptionalism realizes that Muslim Moroccan residents, female Muslim Moroccan residents, deserve to sleep with both eyes closed in their pursuit of happiness because we're Islamophobes. You stupid donkey. Good night.